Hi, K-Watchers. It's Leanne.
Hi, everyone. It's Juliet. Welcome to the K-Watch Party.
Today, we have Mr. Plankton, episodes 1 and 2. Violence, kidnapping, brain tumors, and maybe love? This drama is leaving us confused and yet wanting more. Let's get started. Hi, Juliet. How are you?
Well, we have survived the week-long Thanksgiving break.
Yes, we forgot to mention Happy Thanksgiving on our last episode. I live my life just day by day now. I'm not looking ahead a week at all. Like, my parents showed up at my house and I was like, oh yeah, you guys are coming.
Just, what are you here for?
I'm prepared. How was your break?
Mine was great. I had such a good old time. You know, we stayed at my parents for a week and I just relax. I don't cook a meal. Sometimes I watch my children. Most of the times I don't. So I couldn't have been better. My husband, on the other hand, had to stay at his in-laws for a week. So I think he was itching to get home. And I kept being like, why do I want to go home?
Do you guys do the whole Thanksgiving thing with the turkey and the sides?
After I had kids, I had no desire to cook, like ever. Thanksgiving meals.
Yes.
And so we just did whatever my mom wanted to do, or we would order stuff. This was the first year, 7 years postpartum, that I'm like, I think I'm ready to cook. So I cooked a number of dishes. My sister-in-law cooked some dishes. I did turkey. I also did ham.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we went all out. We had a ton of food. And then the next day we did it with my in-laws and did Korean style. So we did like kalbi and kimchi and japchae. So we got fed very well.
Yeah, there was a lot of eating. I never cook the turkey. My mom just has the solid turkey recipe.
Oh, really?
Yeah, since we were kids. She dry brines the turkey for like 3 days.
Interesting.
Yeah. It's just salt and peppercorn, the brine, and she lightly toasts it. And then she just rubs it all over the turkey and just leaves it in the fridge for 3 days.
Wow.
And then it comes out, just the salt, it gets in the skin, it gets in the, like, the first layer of the meat. It's super juicy. Yeah. The skin is really crispy. And I think, you know, there's a lot of back and forth about what the best way is to prep the turkey. I think it's a shame that more people don't dry brine. It seems
I mean, that seems so easy.
Yeah.
What I did this year was I spatchcocked the turkey and then I did a buttermilk brine.
That's a lot of buttermilk.
It's a lot. I mean, I got the smallest turkey I could find. It's a recipe from Samin Nosrat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the one she wrote, salt, fat, acid, heat. And it's simple because it's just buttermilk and a little bit of salt. And then you put it in the fridge for about 48 hours. I'm all for simpler, the better. Back in the day, I used to do butter under the skin and, you know, like, so much involvement.
The injections.
Yes. And like basting. And there's none of that on this recipe.
Simple is better.
What other sides? Did you make any food or were you putting your feet up like I did the rest of the week?
I did cornbread out of a box, the Allison Roman herby salad.
Oh, yes, that was a good one.
So good because it really cuts through the grease.
Yes.
And my sister-in-law made a butternut squash risotto, which was excellent.
Oh, that was on my...
Really?
That was definitely on my roster of dishes. And that was... I cut it out at the last minute because I was like, this is going to take too much time and I'm not willing to do that.
We're also risottoed out from Napoli Mafia doing risotto every week.
My parents had... watched Culinary Class Wars, and my mom is so extra, and I realized this is why I am the way I am, because I was like, I'm gonna keep it simple, I'm gonna do a few dishes, and then she'd be like, yeah, but like, I was thinking something kind of unique. I feel like this is just too traditional. I watched this guy on YouTube who does an Italian Thanksgiving style, and I was like, no,
don't they do like seven fishes?
Yeah, they do fishes. They just do so many unique, like, you know, other kinds of meatballs, also squashes and risottos and whatnot. And I was like, I don't have the brain capacity to do beyond like just the basic casseroles.
Yes, no.
And then she's like, I already had like six dishes prepared and my sister-in-law was doing some and then her mom was coming and she brought three dishes. And mom was like, I feel like we need to do something else. And I was like, no. But I saw myself in her and I was like, this is why I cook the way I do, but
or just are the way you are.
Yeah, I mean, so
just add it on, pile it on, make it harder,
extra, you know. I was inspired by Napoli Mafia, so I made a tiramisu.
Okay.
That's persimmon nice. Tiramisu.
Oh my god, that sounds so extra.
It was actually, it's not hard at all because you just get persimmon and then you mix it into the mascarpone.
Oh,
but yeah,
cool.
That was it. So a lot of eating.
A nice tradition on Thanksgiving weekend is also watching movies. So I did just get back from Wicked. And to prep all week, like, we know the songs, but, you know, you really got to prep for the movie. So all week it's just been Wicked soundtrack in our car. Mm-hmm. And my husband, like, he's beyond annoyed by this. But anytime he's annoyed, I just turn to him and I say, "These things are sent to try us." And
oh, I'm sure he loves that response.
And I just feel like that's such a good response to just being an annoying person. Yes. You tell a person, "These things are here to try us."
Yes.
And you just got to move past it, you know? So that's what I've been doing this week. The other thing I also started watching this week was the drama The Trunk on Netflix. It has Gong Yoo.
Oh.
I think the woman is very famous too.
I saw somebody had posted about it on a Facebook group and mentioned that it was very good. But it's disturbing.
It's very dark. It is almost the opposite of the drama that we're watching now. And I was going to text you to be like, should we actually switch to The Trunk? But I think that Mr. Plankton is ultimately going to be more fun.
Yes.
And lighthearted. And we're going to have more to talk about. But The Trunk is actually very good so far. I'm 3 episodes in. They set up a good mystery. There's like an arranged marriage. There's definitely somebody dead. He's a rich guy with, it seems like, a conniving wife. So it's laying the stage for what looks to be a good drama. So I recommend it to you.
I did watch I watched the beginning of A Virtuous Business. Have you heard of that one? I think I told you about it. It's like the women who are selling lingerie in like the 1980s.
Yes. And I haven't. Is it on Netflix?
It's on Netflix. Uh-huh. It's almost too outrageous. I don't know if it would have been fun to recap. It starts to get really tropey, mm-hmm, like midway, so I stopped watching it. But there are vibrators involved, lots of lingerie. So not that they're wearing it, but it is very funny.
Oh, okay. Another good recommendation. We should have recommended these last week to everybody while they had time to watch. Did you do any good Black Friday shopping?
I'm really restraining myself. The one thing I did get, hair serum. That's it. The sales, they just overwhelm me.
Yeah.
And I just have to ignore them.
I mean, I got all the things that I've listed off on my list.
You did.
The really boring things. My Helinox chairs are on their way. I got pairs of Crocs.
Did you get the weighted vest?
I got the weighted vest.
Woo!
That sale, that discount was not great. I just hit the bid. I did it. I got a 16-pound vest because you feel like you're outgrowing the 12-pound vest. So we're going to do a switcheroo. I'm going to wear your 12-pound.
I'm going to regret that.
To acclimate, and you're going to put regret on the 16. You better switch with me because
you're going to start with 16 and you're going to pull all of your muscles.
My back is going to go out. So that'll be a nice way to work off all the food we ate this weekend. Thanksgiving week is always definitely a week of excess. I feel like this new drama we're watching, Mr. Plankton on Netflix, is a drama of excess as well. It is definitely over the top.
It's over the top. I can't even categorize what genre this is. It's starting to seem kind of like a romantic comedy.
But
yes. But also has really gory kind of violence to it.
And like finding yourself plot line with our main character and trying to find his parental lineage.
Yeah.
And like overcoming these traumas. It is all over the place.
It's all over the place.
It is a drama of excess. Yeah. And there's so much cursing.
But also there are really humorous parts.
Hilarious parts.
Yeah. So it's confused.
I'm confused. It's all over. But I think it's kind of refreshing because we definitely go into these thinking they're all going to be really romantic.
And cheesy.
Or they're like high school and they all, you know, have the same tropes of being very chaste. And this one definitely seems to be pushing the boundaries a little bit. So I enjoyed the first 2 episodes. Let's start with the main characters. We meet Hye-jo first. This is actor Woo Do-won. Do you know him?
No. Do you know him?
I do.
Oh, you do?
He's from The King Eternal Monarch with Yi Min-ho.
Oh.
That came out a few years ago.
I see.
He very much plays a kind of a quiet right-hand man to him.
Oh.
And so it's a nice turn for him to be so loud and defiant in this show.
Oh, but I find, because I've had no context of him, that it fits his image quite well.
I think the fact that he's like shirtless a lot, it really helps.
He's got a great body.
Ooh, he is a banging bod. I know. I think because he was standing next to Yi Min Ho in that other drama so often. And he, you know, Yi Min Ho is very tall and very leading man. You never really notice how hot he is.
Yes.
But he's pretty hot.
This is why you have to find people who are less attractive than you to be surrounded by.
Yeah, your B players exactly. in these dramas have to be less cute than you.
Well, I'm embarrassed because I was talking about this drama to my niece, and she's in college, and I was showing her the poster of the drama, and I'm like, these are the three actors that they kind of preview. And I was like, I don't recognize any of the young people. I only recognize the old man. Like, this is how aged I am. Aged out of K-dramas.
Does she know them?
So she was saying her friend loves this guy.
Oh, okay.
You know, and she had watched this drama because she thinks the guy's so hot. And I was like, oh.
Yeah.
I don't know who he is.
Well, we are on the Woo Do-hwan train now. The female protagonist, Jo Jae-mi, in the show, this actress is Yi Yu Mi. She was in Squid Game.
So then, yes, I looked her up and I finally realized, I recognized her face. She has a very kind of common face. So mm-hmm. I think it didn't trigger a memory for me, but I do recognize now from Squid Games who she was.
I'm not sold on her yet in the first two episodes.
Yeah, I also feel like the two of them together, I don't know.
We haven't seen a lot of it yet.
Yeah, not the greatest match yet. And
there's a lot of other side players. We could talk about them as we recap. Just from the beginning, you can tell this is not going to be your typical drama.
So the first scene, there are footsteps in the snow. And then you see Hye-jo, the main character.
And a little bit of blood on the snow.
Blood, yes. Mm-hmm. Lying kind of
like an angel.
On his back, like an angel. And he is saying, I don't want to die. And then you see a woman charging towards him.
Cursing at him.
Yeah, cursing at him. And then he says, shibal.
So what is the exact translation? I know it's a very bad word. I don't know the exact word.
It's basically fuck.
Oh, okay. Which you don't see in any of these dramas. Nobody curses.
Fuck? Have you seen this
trend? No. What is this trend?
So then you're supposed to have a conversation. I forgot. I was going to do this trend on you while we were recording and see if you noticed. But basically you're supposed to be like, after everything, be like, the fuck? The fuck? And then the
But you say Shiba?
No, but you say the fuck. That's the trend. That's the American trend. These Korean American kids on TikTok will go to their Korean parents and do it, but say Shiba at the end of it. And like, I feel like in Korea, cursing is just maybe not, doesn't feel as common as it is in the English vernacular. Mm-hmm. The parents are so dumbfounded by the fact that their child is saying Shiba. I mean, it's kind of an egregious thing you would say in front of your parent. There was one dad who's a pastor, and he stared at his daughter like she had lost her mind. And then he just walked away. But in this drama, they say it every other sentence.
It's crazy. I love it. I love that they're just
pushing the boundary.
Yeah, defying. The first half of the first episode is a lot of world building. We get to know what this guy has been up to. His name is Hye-jo. He's seemingly squatting in this old decrepit building that's about to get torn down. He's defying the wishes of this very sexy landlord of his. Who, do you recognize her?
I do know her because I watched My Liberation Notes, but I don't know what else she's from.
She was in Goblin. She also just an interesting look.
She has a very interesting look, I think because her nose is quite prominent, but she has monolids. You know, that combo, I feel, feels a little contradictory. You know, if you have a very prominent nose, you likely have very large double eyelids.
Yeah, she has a very unique look, so very recognizable.
And her name is Lee L.
In real life?
Yeah.
Okay. So we see the relationship with these two.
Yeah, he says that she's his mom, but also sister, but also lover, but also landlord. And he lists off very many hats that she's wearing in his life.
And when he gets in trouble, he comes to her house. We see that his business in this decrepit building is some sort of problem solver.
Like a fixer.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the title of his business, quote unquote, is called Hye-jo Errand House. So, you know, he's kind of doing people's dirty business that they'd rather not do themselves.
So he has a lackey who this kid's also, he's from Descendants of the Sun. There's just a lot of these side characters have been around in a lot of dramas.
He calls himself Yu-Gi-Oh. I thought it was like a joke.
Right, like Yu-Gi-Oh.
Yu-Gi-Oh the manga character.
Either way.
Anyway, I looked that up, and Yu-Gi-Oh! His premise was he was a weak, childish boy who became a hero when he played games. Uh-huh. You know, so I feel like there are a lot of hidden kind of messages in this.
A lot of Easter egging.
Yes, which I love.
He's pretty loyal to Hejo and does his bidding, even though Hejo is pretty crazy and very reckless and puts both of their lives in danger a lot. Hejo is just set up as this very crazy, reckless guy. He's got all these beta fish in his apartment that he can't keep alive. And, you know, beta fish are not meant to be in a tank together. He puts them in a tank together. They like fight to the death.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. So he has multiple in there.
So. Oh, well, there we go. So he's not very smart, or he finds pleasure in people suffering.
Or that's just him looking for a battle all the time. He seems to be looking for a fight.
How do you know so much about beta fish?
I don't know. I think I've had beta fish in my past, but it's that you can't keep two male beta fish together. You'd have to make sure they're only female because the male ones are very territorial. So again, very much a parallel to our Hejo, who seemingly is pretty territorial as well.
Yes. I once had an old coworker who asked me to feed her beta fish.
Okay. Why are you have a weird
I don't know. I just face. Like while she was on vacation, and I just thought like
go to her apartment?
Yeah, I had to open the door with a key, go in and feed it like 3 flakes a day. And I remember telling my colleagues at work, and they were just busting up laughing. And they're like, it just seems so ridiculous.
But what else are the fish supposed to do? Right, if there was a cat, you'd have to feed the cat.
Do that every day for like 2 weeks. And I just felt so silly. I was like, it couldn't have survived for 2 weeks on its own. I guess not.
There's got to be a timed fish flake dispenser. Exactly.
There's got to be.
And then halfway through the first episode, I clocked our first drama trope, which is that Hejo has brain tumors and he will be dying soon. The other big trope that we also find out is that he doesn't have parents.
Mm-hmm.
Classic orphan with a brain tumor.
Very cliche. Well, you're going to die.
Oh, you didn't have parents who loved you? Oh, that explains all of this terrible behavior that's going about to happen. He's definitely just a sad, lost boy. We see a vision of him as a little boy. He's like having a dream. He's a little boy and two people are walking away from him. And they're saying to him, you're not my son.
Yes.
Who are you? He says, if you're not my parents, then who am I?
Mm-hmm.
We find out later in episode 2, I want to say, that the backstory is he was a sperm bank mix-up. That his father had frozen his sperm in a sperm bank. And then when his mother was inseminated, she got the wrong man's sperm. And the clinic called them when he was around 8 years old. And that's when they realized. So they had been raising him lovingly until he was 8.
And then basically wanted to get rid of him.
Which is so sad.
That is so sad. Did you see the recent New York Times article about this?
Or the switch?
Story about the switch?
Yes.
It is crazy so story. Similar to the storyline. And basically, if you haven't read it, please go and read it. It is tragic, but I suppose a little bittersweet and beautiful. They made something beautiful of it at the end. But what had happened was there was a switch. And I think because the baby looked a little bit like ethnically ambiguous, they sort of believed, maybe we had a recessive gene somewhere along the line. And this was, I think, an Eastern European family. But they had a baby that had a lot more like Asian-like features. And then an Asian family.
Half Asian.
Half Asian. Latina and Asian family had a baby that was like blonde and blue-eyed or red-haired. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, clearly not
theirs.
But they had raised them for a few months. Mm-hmm. And even then they felt such a natural like inclination towards the child that they had born versus their own genetic child. And they talk a lot in this article about how the families were dealing with the emotional kind of roller coaster
of, like, genetics versus the baby that you've imprinted on and that's imprinted on you in their first few months. That's why I think that this type of storyline that we find in these dramas are unrealistic, unless there's something really in Korean culture that would make this very different. I don't think normal parents could raise a boy for 8 years.
Yeah.
And then just be like, oh, half of you genetically isn't mine. But it wasn't even cheating. It wasn't a scandal. Right. It was just a mix up. And they would just walk away. I find that very hard to believe.
Yes.
And so these tropes make us suspend our disbelief. But they pin so much on this decision. Like so much of who this kid is, mm-hmm. is because of that history that I just don't find believable. While he's at the hospital finding out his diagnosis, we see Joe Jamie. I love that her name is Jamie. It makes it really easy. We have a good friend named Jamie.
Yes. And all, what makes this interesting too is Jamie is the word for fun, entertaining. Mm. And then his name is Hejo, which means like marine seaweed, algae.
Oh, is that the plankton?
Which is why I think it's called Mr. Plankton.
I see.
They have a lot of fun with these names. And then they flash this woman, Cho Jamie, and she is at the hospital thinking that she has conceived her fiance's child 8 weeks or so. And actually, it wasn't clear. Was she actually pregnant?
So that's the thing.
Or were they pretending that she was pregnant?
Yeah, so she's pretending to be pregnant because that's the only way the fiance says she'll be accepted into his family is if she's pregnant. But then why would you go to the doctor if you know you're actually not pregnant? Why are you at the OBGYN's office? You know you're not pregnant.
Maybe she's asking, what can I do to get pregnant?
It's a checkup. Unclear what she's doing there. If this is all like a lie, she knows it's a lie.
Yes.
What she ends up finding out, which she did not know,
is that she has perimenopause. Like, wow, this...
No, she doesn't have perimenopause. She's in menopause.
She's in menopause.
Yes.
This is so relevant to our lives.
Except the two of us are not reacting to this news by screaming and crying like a crazy person, losing it.
If you found out that you couldn't conceive and you're probably somewhere in your late 20s or early 30s and they told you you were in menopause, I think it's quite devastating.
Yeah.
But then the funniest scene is then some woman tries to like hand her baby to like hold her for a few minutes while she's screaming at her husband for not getting a vasectomy because she's having like she's going to have 2 more children and she's already at 7. And then she tries to steal her. I mean, it's everything here is so unrealistic. Over the top, yeah.
Yes.
Oba.
It is fun though. She's on the floor. She's screaming, why does this happen to me? Why am I? And she literally lists out her exact ailments, which is, right. My fiance's family is very wealthy, won't let me in. And so therefore I must pretend to be pregnant, but now I'm in menopause. So then of course, Hejo, who happens to be there watching this,
knows her whole story.
Knows her predicament and knows that she's going to get married. We see some tender moments of him because as they're leaving the hospital, it's raining. He kind of like sneaks up behind her, just like hands her an umbrella, his umbrella, and then walks through the rain away. And so we're not at this point, not even sure if he knows her at all.
Yeah, we think, he's feeling tender towards this woman who's having a mental breakdown.
Right.
But then classic Korean drama trope, he has a headache. He has a headache that like flashes these memories. And I thought, oh no, this is his past life.
Another time slip.
Yeah, another time slip. He knows this woman from the previous life and they used to have a relationship. But then by episode 2, it becomes clear that they actually were in a relationship and it was very sweet and they were, you know, doing all the lovey-dovey things.
We do see like straddling and kissing sofa. Again, pushing the boundaries of these dramas.
They had a couple ring.
Yes.
Matching cups.
They're both orphans.
Yes. And then they have a very bitter breakup where they say things that you really cannot come back from.
Yeah.
She tells him, you're going to be miserable all of your life and die alone on the streets. And then he tells her, yeah, you would be a great wife, but a terrible mom because you never had anybody who loved you.
Oh, harsh. This menopause is a tough blow for Jamie because she is enfianced to a guy who comes from a clan that has been around for 500 years. And that's like hella old for Korea, you know? And he is the eldest son and maybe only son that can continue the lineage of this very treasured family.
I love seeing this because my mom's side of the family has a village just like this. My mom has a kind of a unique last name. And I went to visit it sometime when I was in my 20s. It's still like this, where they have the old school roof, you know, the old school homes. They gather just like they did in this drama.
Like sitting, eating a meal, like down the line like that.
Yeah. It is.
Kimchi pots everywhere.
It is a family that has lived together for over 600 years. So I think maybe modeled after. I think there are a few other villages and lineages that have this still remaining. But because we're not a Kim and a Park and like a Lee.
That's it.
Yeah, Cho, whatever. Those are the big ones. And they've all been like, you know, dispersed. They have stayed pretty close together. And they were considered like noble family. Exactly.
Wow.
So you could still go and visit it to this day.
So does your family still live there?
They have a record on site of all of the lineage, only the men, of course. I think there are direct relatives and people who used to know my grandparents, but those, they probably have passed by now. But my, the story behind this is that my grandmother had seven children, but she had six girls in a row. Okay. And she said that her mother-in-law was gonna kick her out.
Of this village.
Just like out of the family. By the sixth girl, she's like, you're going to get kicked out. And then she got pregnant that year. Like and, within the year, you know, probably Irish twins. And it was a boy.
Oh.
So it's that he saved her. He saved his mother. That's a big burden to carry.
So that was my question with this clan. We see in episode two at the marriage ceremony, everybody is wearing very traditional garb for the wedding. Feels very insular in this village, like it was happening 100 years ago. My big question was, do these types of villages still exist and these clans still exist?
A few do. Yeah, this is the one that is part of my mom's family. It says it's one of 12 designated UNESCO World Heritage Sites.
Oh, cool.
But I don't know if that means there are 12 other villages just like this. Last time when I was in my 20s, they were all dressed in the traditional garb.
Just every day hanging out. All right. So that's why the menopause is very bad luck for her, because if she can't have children, they're getting married in a few days. When they find out she can't have kids, this is donezo for her. We end episode one with a lot of action. A woman with bodyguards comes into his office and demands of him to kidnap her from her wedding. Do you know this woman?
This woman I do know.
Finally.
She was one of the hosts of Singles Inferno.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. The main, like, pretty
one. She's gorgeous.
Yes. It's nice to see she can act. I thought she was just a pretty face on these reality shows.
Yeah.
Tahi is her name.
But she's getting married to a gang boss. What's also unclear, though, is she kept calling Hejo from a number that he designated as do not pick up. It was either unknown number or do not pick up, but she called like the 15 cell phones he had. So they must have had some kind of relationship as well.
Huh.
Like they know each other from something previously.
When his lackey is asked, what's his plan? How is he going to go get her? The lackey's like, he has no plan. This guy just goes by the seat of his pants.
He's like you, living day by day.
Truly.
Minute by minute.
He basically takes his motorbike, drives it into this wedding, just steals her in front of everybody, takes his helmet, just bashes the groom, this badass gangster, in the face, and just sweeps her up and leaves. On the road, he's driving. The bride is behind him. They're celebrating. He has another mental kind of vision in his mind as he's driving. So he ends up crashing along the road. When he wakes up, he's in the hospital. The bride is gone, has taken all the gangster's money. The gangster can't believe that the woman would ever leave him and use him. So now he's after Hejo.
And as episode is coming to a close, we see that Cho Temi is getting ready for her wedding. She's like in all of the traditional hanbok wear. And it looks like her fiance has to cover his face and walk to her room. But what's happening behind the doors is Hejo has come in to Chemi's room and is trying to take her with him to find his father.
He did a fake kidnapping of a bride for his job. And now it looks like he might actually be trying to kidnap a real bride.
And he, of course, now knows the entire story. He's like, I know you scammed him. I know you don't have a baby in your belly. I know you're in menopause. So that's how he can blackmail her. And then episode two opens up with a flashback to 1991.
Yeah. 1991 was 30 years ago.
What?
That killed me.
What? Like, oh, wait,
that can't be right. And I did the math. It's at 30 years ago in 1991.
Oh my gosh.
Do you not, how old do you feel right now? She's silent. You know, she is speechless.
I would say even up to last year, I felt young. Nope. I felt young inside.
Nope.
I'm coming to grips with the fact that I am no longer young. No. Even the fact that I didn't recognize any of these people, I was kind of embarrassed.
We go back to 30 years ago. We see his backstory. We know now his abandonment issues come from the fact that his parents rejected them. So he is now back at the clinic. He has a bat in hand. I love a guy holding a bat, like wielding a bat.
You know, you have some of the strangest fantasies. I love it. Always starts out with like, I love a guy who.
And then the second half of the sentence is just like a total mystery.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, what am I going to say?
A bat in his hand. Okay.
Baseball He's swinging like, a bat.
Like, so you love gangsters.
Yeah,
so
like.
You like loan sharks.
You know, a guy with a bat, like a lone guy swinging a bat, you know, he's clinking it along the beads of the clinic.
What?
That is so sexy. Like, he is there to do some damage, and he's got a mission. Maybe it's the man on a mission that I like, but with the bat. There's
yeah.
something about it.
It sounds like you like a man who's going to beat someone to a pulp.
Yeah. So, yeah, so he's got the bat in hand. He's at the clinic. He's threatening the doctor who screwed up his paternity to give him the names of who, I think it was number 137, actually mm-hmm. really was. So he gets a list of 5 men who could potentially be his father. And it seems like we're setting up the rest of these episodes to be him going on a journey across the country to go find out who his real father is. And for some reason, he needs Jo Jae-mi to go with him. Before he actually kidnaps her, we meet the husband, who is a real dope.
This is the guy that I know.
The one guy, yes.
The one guy that I know. He's 44 years old.
Well, where do you know him from?
His name is Oh Jung-sae. I have seen him in, he was in this one drama called Mount Chiri.
I know him from It's Okay Not to Be Okay.
Oh, I didn't watch that
He was actually just in Queen of Tears. He's a psychiatrist.
Ah,
those two are together,
yes.
It's okay, not to be okay.
He's never the main character.
No,
you
definitely
know, but
not.
He was in The Good Detective.
He's been, got real B character energy. Yes.
Yes. But he's had a prolific career.
The character seems to be a mama's boy.
Yes. And he is clearly older. So I imagine having a hard time finding someone to marry. And his name is Oh Hung. And Oh Hung is the sound that Koreans make when they're talking about a tiger.
Okay.
But then also...
like instead of a roar?
Yeah. Oh, Hung. And then also Hung, that last character, Hung, is like somebody who's like really excited. So that's why they were saying, Oh Hung and Jae-mi. Jae-mi being fun. It's a match made in heaven. But then he's like, oh yeah, I'm the same age as her. And then he goes, no, I'm the 띠동갑, which means... we're the same, we're 12 years different, which is in the zodiac.
Yes.
So
they're the same animal.
Yeah, you kind of say like, oh, we're the same age when you are the same zodiac. There are a lot of humorous moments in this.
He's definitely very caring and kind to her.
Yeah.
He definitely seems to really love her. He searched the whole country for the right wedding shoes that she wanted that would fit her. And she has seemingly found somebody to bring her into his family and not let her run away is what we see from them. I'm not sure at this point if she really loves him back. Do you think she really does? Or is she just so desperate for a family?
Well, I mean, I bet she doesn't dislike him. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of the classic dilemma. Classic, I don't know if you went through this, but, you know, somebody who gives you security mm-hmm. versus somebody who gives you excitement. You know, because I think...
Are you saying you went through this?
No. I'm not saying for me per se. But, you know, I think some women feel this mm-hmm. kind of... I prefer security.
Yes,
I don't
right.
care, but I'm the one who will bring excitement. I don't need somebody who's going to bring excitement in my life. I much prefer somebody who will bring me, you know...
So actually, your husband was the one who was deciding between too much excitement
exactly.
versus a calmer.
He chose excitement. He probably regrets that decision now.
I see. Yes. Now, the classic tug, pull and a tug of, how are you going to live the rest of your life? She's definitely going for security. But he does have a very overbearing mother. This woman has run his life and she will not let her son defy what is needed of him, which is to sire a son to keep this family line going.
Yes.
And she 100% believes that this girl, this rando girl, orphan girl, is pregnant. Like, we should be getting some pregnancy tests. Like, yeah. a mother like right. this right. would have exactly. demanded results and demanded her, she be in the room with yep. a doctor to confirm it. So yep. I find this a little hard to believe.
In fact, she probably would have said, I want a health screen before you get engaged. I want to know how many eggs you have. I don't want to know what kind of diseases you have in your lineage.
We're going to go get this baby, like those big needle tests that yep. they take out for the genetics. Yeah. So it's very hard to believe that this mother hasn't figured out her menopause situation yet. But here we are. So Jamie is taken by Hejo. She knocks out. When she wakes up, she's in the car with him. She doesn't know why he's taking her. She tries to run away multiple times.
Well, why do you think he's taking her?
It seems like he thinks he knows her very well, and he knows that this isn't the right life for her. Mm. And so I think he thinks he's saving her, and he needs a buddy on this journey. Because right. I also think he might feel like he's not strong enough to do this on his own. Mm. So that's my theory about why he's abducting her against her will. Like, I find this to be the hardest part about the drama so far. She's trying to get away. Like, she's not sitting around kind of waiting for somebody to, like, she is actively trying to sneak away, and he's keeping her against her will. So it's like not very romantic. This woman is being stripped of all her power. She cannot make any of her own decisions. And she's at this mercy of a pretty emotionally abusive person.
I would say that's a classic K-drama trope.
Really?
Like, a man who wields a lot of power and makes a woman powerless. And I think we talked about this many, many episodes ago about Korean men and believing that if they just chop away at the tree, mm-hmm. you know, they're going to get a woman to fall in love with them. I can already foresee where this drama is headed. And I similar to you, I don't love it. I don't love that storyline. When we were recapping Marry My Husband, that was also the storyline between the main girl and her husband. He was an ass to her yeah. and she stayed with him until she had her awakening. And then she became this powerful, independent woman. And so maybe we'll see some of that here, but I feel that he feels that he knows what's best for her and he's going to force her into it.
And I think we're going to be led to believe that he actually really cares for her and loves her. So that's why this is okay. But yeah. I'm not feeling so great about this yeah. so far. She's definitely trying to escape. She's left a voicemail for her husband to say, like, this is where we're headed. Come find me.
And that's probably where this story is headed, because he's always been a bit the husband. Oh, he's been a bit of a mama's boy, kind of like usually does what he's told. And this time he's trying to defy her rules and all the people within the village and going out to find his
beloved
kidnapped woman.
So by the end of episode 2, we have this gangster is after Hejo. We have Eun-hung is after Hejo, and the overbearing mother is also, she's got minions out looking for her unborn grandchild. Mm. 2 episodes really set up, it feels like, the journey we're going to be on for the next 8 episodes. Something to look forward to.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I can tell, like, is this going to be fun at the minimum?
Yeah, actually, I was watching it on my own on my computer, and then I halfway said to my husband, I think you'd enjoy this, because mm-hmm. I think there's, like, you know, the violence, you know, that would draw him in.
Gangsters.
Yeah. So we'll see.
Okay. So we will be back next week with Mr. Plankton, episodes 3 and 4. If you have doubts about this show, I have to say it's at the minimum just like a very fast, easy way to spend a few hours.
It's entertaining.
I think the one thing we have to say to sell this show is that Woo Do-hwan
takes off his shirt many times.
And he's like kind of wet and sweaty. He has a bat. He's yielding a yes. bat. He's running.
I love a guy who has wet t-shirts and a bat.
He's running through the rain in a wet suit. Love that. So if not for anything else, watch it for this guy. We will be back next week. Thanks for sticking with us, and we'll talk to you next week.
Bye. Bye.